Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday, November 13th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. Happy Friday the 13th. It surprised me yesterday. We haven't had one of those in a while. Hopefully, it's a happy and productive one. It is 47 degrees. Breezy, they're saying, and overcast here in upstate New York. We did not quite get the 50-mile-an-hour winds they predicted, but I think it was around 35, they were saying. We had gusts last night. It was pretty breezy, absolutely, and rainy and crappy, and, you know, it's hibernation mode for everybody in the Northeast, pretty much. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show UN, Bill Gates, Franken meats and human cow milk. And if you remember, we talked about a lot of disturbing things this week. We were talking about that new little meat company, 2013. We found out, which I did not know about, that Billy Gates was an investor in, for making meat alternatives. This happened to be working on chicken that tasted and looked just like a chicken, but wasn't quite a chicken. And then that Chinese company that was splicing and dicing human DNA cells into bovine cells, into cloned bovine cells, and then using a surrogate with the genetically modified cloned embryo to then birth, grow and birth this new genetically modified cloned cow that produced human milk. And the interesting part about all that is they were talking about, it was in 2011, I believe. I don't know. I'll have to find where that story is. I don't remember. I think it was 2011. And what's odd is that if you do some searching, I shouldn't have even have clicked that because now I'm screwing everything up. Stop. I lost my train of thought. Oh, it's been a long week, guys. No more technical issues. I'm done. All right, whatever. Let me not even look at that so I can concentrate again. If you take a look at what they were talking about in the story, which was commercializing the technology. So even if it was 2013, but I think it was 2011 that story was from, I can't find any information on any type of cloned cows, GMO cows with human DNA spliced to create human milk. And it was a big deal when that story came out. I remember because we all talked about it. We did that on that WTF show we used to do. And it was fitting because we've been talking about mad science gone mad food all week. And we had the cheese without cow in it. And they had actually mentioned maybe splicing in human milk genes to make human milk cheese. So that's what reminded me of that story. But I'm disturbed that we've discovered now in months of research, but in particular this week, that we've been eating this crap, this transgenic, mad science, lunacy food, P-H-O-O-D food, for decades, the story said. And we'd known that already. Because we dug in and found out about that Flavor Saver tomato from the early to mid-90s. I mean, I knew about that tomato. Not knew about it, but knew about it because I had always thought there was something funky with that tomato. That tomato that started giving me allergies every time I ate something. Every time I ate tomatoes with caffeine. Head to toe. I mean, it wasn't even funny. I'd be at work. Head to toe hives. And the only relief would be to take some Benadryl. And that's not going to help you on a Friday night with a 10-hour shift waiting tables. I'll tell you that. So I knew there was something funky with my food. Then I couldn't digest proteins anymore. That's what came next. I couldn't eat meat. Because every time I'd eat meat, it would just sit like a rock and not go anywhere. And make me feel like I was going to die as it was rotting in my stomach. You know, and now we see there's all kinds of stuff here with the gut bacteria being killed and improper digestion and whatever. So, but what really bothers me about these cows with spliced human genes is, first of all, I mean, where is this going to end? We've seen, too, they were doing that with pigs now. They were working on some of the transplant technologies using pigs to grow organs by splicing in a few human genes. And then that gets around the issues that they've had in the past with the body rejecting the organs as foreign organisms. But where is this going to end? We have them already looking at embryos. We saw that in China, they were the first country now. It's not allowed here yet, wink. We're the first country, China is the first country now, that has actually gone in and genetically modified embryos with traits before they implanted them. And I mean, I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be too long. We've talked about this before. Before we start seeing X-Men type technology, as they isolate each gene and what it does, and don't think it's going to be too long now, they're getting pretty far at understanding all these little bits and pieces and, you know, poking this and that to figure out what does what. They'll be able to create for price, mind you. It's not going to be for you and me. Maybe version 1.0 testing will be for you and me, but not the end result for the perfected human that they're working on here. But eventually, you'll be able to pay for a price to have a superhuman child. They're going to have superhuman intelligence and strength and speed and who knows what. But there's going to be definitely multiple upper and lower classes, no longer just at an economic level, but at a physical level. We will be inferior humans. Maybe not you and me. I mean, it might be a generation or two. But in our future and our progeny, if we are even allowed to reproduce anymore. I just was reading something about that yesterday in this story about the Institute for Ethics. But I don't know where that is right now. Maybe we'll save that for Monday. There's, you know, by the end of the week, one of the things you guys have to realize, I have three machines going at all times where I do my research. Some for one, some for another, then others when I'm done out here and I go upstairs and then I'm still working. And by Friday, I have a machine that has tabs open from what I never got to yesterday or the day before. And it's a whole running list that goes all week. But then remember, on each machine, there's multiple browsers open. And then there's the machine that I do all the research on. So by the end of the week, it's like I have so much stuff that I've read, so much potential material that I could talk about. And it just, you know, usually by Sunday, everything crashes and I close the tabs and we start fresh on Monday. I came across a story, though, getting kind of to where we've been all week. This story is out of sciencemag.org. This is one of those science publications. And it is titled, 3,230 Genes You Can't Do Without. So if anyone's questioning how far they've come along in genomics and understanding, you know, we ended the show talking about the telomeres and how long you live in cloning. That was one of my theories when we were talking about the cloned cows that then they spliced in the human milk-making genes and how a good majority of those cows died shortly after birth. And I've read quite a lot about cloning over the last few years, and a few of the issues they have with clones are not only do they seem to have a shorter life, and there's all kinds of controversy over Dolly, the first cloned sheep way back when in England, the UK, that they cloned, and they said that she only lived half as long as normal sheep, 6 years versus 12, I believe, and that her telomeres were shortened, which are where they've identified over all these years of research, the telomere. I don't know if it's actually DNA strands, but it's like the ends of these strands, and as you age, they get shorter and shorter. And as your body, you know, has trauma or you eat bad food or whatever, you know, they get shorter and shorter and it causes you to age. Well, Dolly supposedly, and now I see there's all kinds of arguments that Dolly's telomeres weren't shortened, but regardless, I went out to one of the universities cloning technology lessons. And they said exactly what I had been thinking, what I'd read, what I'd researched, is that not all species have shortened telomeres, but many do, and many do have shortened lifespans. They're not really sure yet how the telomere thing fully works. So, you know, put on a seatbelt, because it's something that they're researching as part of the longevity project. All of the tech billionaires who want to live forever. But we had discussed how cloning and these other technologies could shorten the lifespan. Well, anyway, back to this story out of sciencemag.org. 3,230 genes you cannot do without. So apparently they've gotten pretty far down the line to be able to identify this many. Fiddle just a little bit with any of the 3,230 genes in the human body and you could be toast. That is the conclusion of a new study, which finds that about 15% of our 20,000 genes are so critical to our livelihood that certain changes can kill us before we're born. Ding, 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 ding. You know, so let's extend this a little bit. As we take a look at the mad science gone mad in our food supply and all these unknowns that are happening down the line, because there isn't any real research being done as to what the long-term effects of us consuming genetically modified organisms or spliced and diced organisms or animals who have consumed genetically modified organisms or feed. Because there's almost zero long-term research. And I read something very disturbing, and it might be this next one. It was out of Heather Callaghan's publication, Natural Blaze, and we'll see. But as we're eating all this stuff, and there's no real science behind it, and now they're discovering, oh, there may be problems. And yes, there is uptake of DNA or RNA fragments into your cells, and whoops, they could potentially affect the organism down the food chain. It should be very worrisome that there is a large number of genes in our body that if anything is done to them, it could be curtains for us. 3,200 genes is quite a big number. It's like shooting a cue ball into a rack on a pool table and hope you don't hit the eight ball. I mean, what are the chances? All right. Anyway, that's the conclusion of a new study which finds that about 15% of our 20,000 genes are so critical to our livelihood that certain changes can kill us before we're born. These findings should help researchers better track down the genes that cause human disease. Well, phew. Yeah, good thing. That's what we're looking for. Not the genes that will immediately kill us. Given how useful any insights into gene function are for the understanding of genetic basis of disease, the data is priceless, says Carrie Stephenson, a geneticist at deCODE in Reykjavik. I believe that's in Iceland. And I think we just ran into deCODE recently, maybe even this week in a different story. I'd have to look them up. This new study, which was recently posted to a preprint repository but has not yet been published in a peer-reviewed publication, was the result of researchers comparing the parts of the genome known as exomes, which code for proteins, from 60,000 different people, 10 times more than had ever been attempted. And I'm wondering if all those 60,000 people had some sort of DNA ancestry test done and then checked the box that you could use my DNA material for scientific experiments. Researchers led by Daniel MacArthur, a geneticist at the Broad Institute of Massachusetts, at the Broad Institute of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Oh, He lives right in the lizard's den. Achieved this feat by reaching out to teams around the world who had collected their own set of exomes. Oh, so, all right. Lots of exome collectors put these together. And among all those genes, the researchers found 10 million variants, places within genes that varied from person to person. MacArthur's team calculated how many variants each gene should have if those changes arise by chance, and they compared that to the number of variants actually found for each gene. The result? 3,230 genes that either had no observed variation or, compared to what was expected, much, much less of the kind of changes that could lead to a malfunction of the gene. Such data suggests that whenever one of those genes mutates, the embryo usually dies or the person is too sick to reproduce. Ding, 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 ding. So the variations disappear. Now, this is very disturbing that they have managed to isolate 3,230 genes out of our 20,000 that if there is a mutation in any of those genes, your offspring will either die or you will be too sick to reproduce. That sounds so familiar to me. Sounds really familiar because we read about, not exactly, but very similar sorts of findings in some of the tinkering they've been doing with CRISPR-Cas9 and mosquitoes. Oh, for malaria reduction and elimination. And who else has been working on malaria drugs? Oh, Billy Gates. Yeah, what a tangled web we weave. This just really bothers me. Quote, genes that displayed no variants should be essential or play crucial biological functions, says Ping Zhu, a molecular microbiologist at the Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond. Ping and others have similarly found such essential genes in bacteria and mice, and many of the highlighted human genes are associated with these same critical cellular operations, such as the cell's protein building factories, which we've talked about this. Guys, this is exactly what they're doing with the mosquitoes, and now they've identified the genes in humans. This is not good at all. They've highlighted the human genes associated with the same critical cellular operations, such as the cell's protein building factories, as in those species, MacArthur's group reports that about 20% of the human genes uncovered by the analysis are already associated with diseases, but many are not. Yet. They are the first places David Goldstein, a geneticist at Columbia University in New York City who was not involved with the work, says that he is going to look for connections to other medical conditions. And because they seem vital, these genes can be specifically monitored during drug development for potential side effects and cytotoxicity, says Zhu. The key to successes of MacArthur's team, says other researchers, was gathering so much DNA data, and MacArthur declined to comment since the paper isn't yet officially published. They do a really nice job of showing that you get a lot more information by studying an order of magnitude of more people, says Joshua Aki, a population geneticist at the University of Washington in Seattle. And even so, Goldstein is quick to point out that the 3,230 is not the complete set of essential genes in the human body, and that by studying more exomes will researchers be able to refine that number. Furthermore, exomes don't cover DNA in between genes, which helps regulate gene activity, and variation there can also be important. And finally, what researchers really want to know is what specific parts of the gene is essential. Bottom line, Goldstein says, this is another very big step in a very long road that we are on to understand what does and doesn't happen in the human genome. And, you know, we just saw a story last week or the week before where they had announced that they had discovered certain genes, and I don't know, this is so far back now in the feed, I'm not going to be able to go back and find this right now while I'm on air, but they had found certain genes that if you deleted them, now, deleting genes and having that propagate out throughout an organism, I don't know, you want to sign up for that, go right ahead, and I'll let you cut in line, but it's not going to be me. But they had discovered deleting certain genes. I think they might have done it in a yeast to start with. Good old yeast. Yeast has become our friend everywhere, it seems. By deleting genes, they could extend the life of the yeast 60%. I'm sure Kurzweil was rubbing his evil hands together because he was thinking about how he could live forever. Tell you, the person who discovers how to actually edit, splice, and dice to be able to double a lifespan is going to take their bazillionaire status and make themselves into quadrillionaires. If that's even a, I don't know, quadrillion? I think so. All right, so next story. This is going back to soybeans. We discussed GMO soybeans yesterday. Livestock, what happens to them? Maybe this was even the day before, I think. About how offspring of GMO-fed, GMO soybean-fed goats, I believe, had offspring that were way smaller than goats' offspring who were not fed GMO soybeans. And we had postulated some of what Dr. Huber had talked about, where the glyphosate actually chelates out necessary nutrients from the body. It also damages your gut bacteria, so you're not getting the proper absorption of nutrients. Well, check this out. This is a pretty interesting story, and I want to stay on top of this one because whoever this Dr. V.A. Shiva Adaruvi is, I think he should get a medal if this is for real. And I mean, this is Heather's website, so I'm assuming that this is a real story, and they've done, I mean, Heather is a good researcher, and I'm hoping that this is all for real. So naturalblaze.com, November 9th, 2015, this is one of the writers Heather has, Justin Gardner, scientist offers Monsanto $10 million to prove him wrong on ominous findings in GMO soy. Yeah, they didn't literally offer him like $10,000. He offered him his $10 million building in Cambridge, Massachusetts, if they could prove his research wrong. So check this out. Dr. V.A. Shiva, and let's spell his name, because Indian names I have real trouble with. A-Y-Y-A-D-U-R-A-I, Iruderai, is so confident about his research on Monsanto's genetically modified soy. And remember, I think I said yesterday between 80 to 90% of all U.S. soy is GMO. And I saw a number last night at 94%. So that's pretty close. He is so confident about his research on Monsanto's genetically modified soy that he is offering to sign over his $10 million building in Cambridge, Massachusetts, if Monsanto can prove him wrong. Quote, if this is what it takes to bring the truth to the American people, then I am more than willing to do it, says Adaruvi stated in a press release. Dr. Adaruvi released a bombshell in July when his peer-reviewed study found that GMO soy accumulates formaldehyde, a carcinogen, and it disrupts the plant's metabolism. Instead of engaging this MIT graduate and systems biologist, Monsanto and its propaganda arms have launched character attacks. Ray Seldler, a former EPA senior scientist, said of his study, quote, "Formaldehyde is a known class 1 carcinogen, and its elevated presence in soybeans caused by a chemical genetic engineering event is alarming and deserves immediate attention and action from the FDA and the Obama administration. Soy is widely grown and consumed in the U.S., and including by infants fed in baby food products, here we go, with 94% of soy grown here being genetically engineered. And what's even more bothersome is that formaldehyde is known as a class 1 carcinogen. And they're putting shit like formaldehyde in the vaccinations. And we're not even talking the new mad science gone mad vaccines with nanotech or RNAi technology. We're talking like old school vaccines. And, you know, even look at the ones that are supposedly, quote unquote, thimerosal free. And it still says on the insert there's formaldehyde. I remember the day I questioned the pediatrician why we're putting something that we normally put into dead people into my newborn. Oh, it's a preservative. Yeah, but it's also a class 1 carcinogen. And you know something else? I've been digging into vaccine inserts. You can find a lot of them on the manufacturer's websites online. And if you scroll way down to the small print at the bottom on a lot of these, you're going to see specifically one of the things they were never tested for was carcinogenesis. Now, shouldn't that be a reason with all this I just saw now, this Vaccinating All Children Act of 2015 that we talked about quite a few months ago is now forwarded on to whichever one it hasn't gone through yet, whether it's the House or the Senate. It's in now a new place. They're getting ready to kick this off, man, to force vaccines on every child in the country or to ban your child from schools because they're all going to withhold federally funded money if the schools allow in unvaccinated children. Shouldn't that be a reason enough? Not for anything else, but the fact that they are not testing any of these for future cancer-causing materials in your child. And you're supposed to put your child up there and say, go right ahead. And if my kid gets cancer here in 20 years or 10 years, oh, well, I did it for the herd. Another thing that I've seen a lot of on those vaccine inserts toward the bottom is that they've not been tested on future fertility. And knowing what we know about all these other vaccines and some of the issues and some of the things that they've found, and good old Billy Gates in the middle of all this, and he just bought a vaccine company. I think it was that CureVax. I think that was the name of it. And he's working on this permanent birth control we read a few months back. I mean, this, and there's going to be the haves and the have-nots. And, you know, out on transhumanist sites, I was out on this transhumanist site the other day, reading some stories, one that I subscribe to, and they probably think I'm a transhumanist because I always post stuff about robots and all this mad science. But, you know, what they don't understand is I am trying to expose this machine. But there's a story where they're talking about, like, really what's going to happen here in the next few years when we're in a post-work world. Do you understand that? Post-work. As robot production has stepped it up, especially in China, countries like that, ones that are large manufacturing countries. There's not going to be jobs there. Those jobs, those low-paying jobs, where they have a lot of the workers there working like slaves, jumping out of buildings. We've heard so many stories about Apple factories and the horror. They're not going to have to worry about that anymore. It's going to be done by robots. We read, too, a lot of the software that they're writing right now with AI, even a lot of the quote-unquote intellectual jobs. We talked about accountants. We read about lawyers. Lawyers may become a thing of the past at some point in the future. When there's no more jobs, and we can't add to the GDP, and we just really literally become useless eaters, Let the useless eaters eat cake. Let the useless eaters eat genetically modified bug protein printed out of a 3D printer. And now they became our guinea pigs. So they might not be producing for us, but they're our free research and development line item budget. I've been saying this for so long, and it is coming to fruition. I really believe that is the plan. We'll still be making them money by saving them money. And you'll think they're doing you a favor. And they're literally talking about, like, being given. They think that the future is going to be that they're just going to give us, like, a paycheck every week just for being alive called universal basic income. I mean, what kind of idiot thought that up? You really think that if you're sitting around, I mean, is this going to be, like, beyond the welfare state? Not even going to be a welfare state because everyone's going to be on welfare. Universal basic income. We're just going to give it to everybody. Not that, you know, they don't even think that we're going to need money to buy things anymore because with all this new technology, this will be the globe of plenty. We'll have food and water and housing and clothing at the touch of a press button. And it's going to be full-blown utopia. These people need their heads checked. Anyway, back to the story. Dr. Erudivi's findings are as much a challenge to the current U.S. regulatory system. So remember, we're telling Monsanto that their GMO soy produces formaldehyde. And formaldehyde is a class 1 carcinogen. And it is elevated in the soybeans that then the animals or the people are consuming. So offer $10 million building to Monsanto to prove him wrong. His findings are as much a challenge to the current U.S. regulatory system as they are a reminder to how GMO crops could pose human health risk. The current regulatory framework of substantial equivalence, and this is what I've talked about, an apple is an apple, a potato is a potato, the rubber stamping of the regulatory agencies to just fast track, just like they want to do now with 21st century medicine, fast track this genetically modified food with the revolving door between Monsanto and regulatory agencies. They're letting Monsanto do their own research on food safety. The FDA has fully admitted that, hey, a large amount of the research that's been published out there is fraudulent. And hey, we don't have enough inspectors at the FDA or the USDA to inspect the food. And I was just reading some stuff about the TPP since this the text has finally been released. I mean, it's even worse than getting rid of all the labeling everywhere, which they've been doing across the board. They're getting rid of a majority of the inspections too, guys. And right now, currently with the way the system is, we only inspect 2%, 2% of the food that is imported into this country now. And it's going to get less. And they don't need to tell you if there's bug protein in there. The current regulatory framework of quote unquote substantial equivalence. So apparently that's what they call it. This apple is an apple, a potato is a potato, slice and dice inside it, and it doesn't make a difference. This framework of substantial equivalence used for approval is outdated and unscientific. No. As it was originally developed in the 1970s. Oh, yes, we were so high tech in the 70s for assessing the safety of medical devices. The current criteria for assessing equivalence considers only basic nutritional and superficial characteristics such as taste, sight, smell, and touch for declaring GMO safe for human consumption, allowing them to be fast-tracked to market without independent scientific testing. So there you go. If you ever needed it out of the cattle's mouth, there it is. We've been talking about this forever. They aren't testing this shit. Dr. Huber said they're not testing this shit. They're not doing any type of multi-generational testing before it's released on the masses. The masses are the R&D. If formaldehyde and glutathione were criteria, then the GMO would likely not be deemed equivalent to its non-GMO counterpart. This finding calls into question the FDA's food safety standards for what? Oh, the entire country. So this has been allowed since the 1970s. We found out in the 80s they started tinkering with putting vaccines into GMO bananas, right? We read about all that. The GMO lettuce vaccine, GMO rice vaccine. I also was reading about the human, there was, at one point we did this story, but I was searching human DNA spliced into stuff. There was the human DNA that was spliced into rice at one point. What were the other vaccines? The apple, the GMO apple vaccine, and the potato vaccine. Food safety standards for the entire country. Since biotech companies acquire patents on their GM crops, they can also legally bar anyone else from conducting research for safety assessments. Their own industry research, which is known to be falsified, is usually the only information used by the FDA to give the green light to GMO crops. So yeah, I just feel so safe with the fox watching the hen house, and especially Monsanto, the ones who've created DDT and Agent Orange and glyphosate, and I don't know, I'm sure there's all kinds of other poisons that they've unleashed upon the world throughout their history. And they really give two shits about your kid. The results demand immediate testing, says Dr. Iruvudiyai, along with rigorous scientific standards to assure such testing is objective and replicable. It's unbelievable such standards for testing do not already exist. You know, what's even more unbelievable, when the last paragraph that said that they can legally bar anyone else from conducting research for safety assessments because of their patents, that almost sounds to me like the crap they're trying to pull now on cars, calling cars a mobile computing device and using DCMA or DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, to bar people from looking at the computer software that's running on their car because, ooh, it's trade secret. And preventing you from making any modifications. Anyway, back to the statement from Dr. Iruvudiyai. I wish I could say his name. Iruvudiyai. The results demand immediate testing along with rigorous scientific standards to assure such testing is objective and replicable. It's unbelievable such standards for testing do not already exist. Yeah, I agree with him. It sure is unbelievable. The safety of our food supply demands that science deliver such modern scientific standards for approval of GMOs, he said. With genetically modified foods, a small and single GM creates large and systemic perturbations to molecular systems equilibria, says Dr. Iruvudiyai in his paper's abstract. For this reason, the safety assessment procedure for GMO crops is woefully inadequate, and the biotech industry has maintained that direct modification of a plant's genetic material is a harmless extension of the natural process of plant breeding. But this claim is more spurious than ever with Dr. Irvarudiai's research. He says, this is not a pro or an anti-GMO question, but rather, are we following the scientific method, which he's absolutely right, I mean, down to the basics of science, are we following the scientific method to ensure the safety of our food supply? Right now, the answer is no. But we need to, and we can if we engage in open, transparent, and collaborative scientific discourse based on a systems approach. Now, unfortunately, this doctor is 100% right. He's got a $10 million building sitting right in the middle of the Lizard's Den in Cambridge, Mass. And unfortunately, you better be careful because he's going to find something terrible that's going to happen to his building. So he no longer has that $10 million asset to go up against large industry GMO providers, I bet. There's no scientific method being employed whatsoever to ensure the safety of the genetically modified food that they've been releasing for, what did we find out yesterday? Decades into our food supply, and we've been consuming. None whatsoever. Just that Monsanto said so. Our scientists said it was safe. You consume it. Don't worry about it. If you have issues, it's not our food. Because an apple is an apple and a potato is a potato. All right. So is there any good news? I know. It's weeks and weeks of bad news every morning. And it's kind of what motivates me to get up in the morning. Sadly so. But hey, we read about a few months ago some of the experiments they were doing in Florida with this disease, this insect infestation that the oranges mysteriously have that's killing a lot of the oranges, just like everything. I just saw an update, by the way, on bird flu. Speaking of, I don't know if we were talking about it on air or in chat yesterday, but you know, we were saying whatever happened to the bird flu now that we have all this Chinese chicken and Bill Gates investing in this fake chicken that looks and tastes and feels just like chicken and won't need any labels as it slips into the marketplace. But I guess they're saying that there's a huge shortage now of turkeys. And any of the turkeys that are out there are probably going to be loaded with that Ranco something. I don't know, some horrible drug that they inject into turkeys and probably chickens. I'm sure it's a foul thing to bulk them up, but it's very toxic and it's been banned in every other nation except for the United States. So I don't know. You should be buying organic turkeys if you buy one is basically what the end result of that story was. But hey, is there some good news? Well, there might be. So this insect infestation that's decimating the orange industry in Florida, there's some good news. Researchers invent a device. And we already talked about sound a few weeks ago, shattering cancers. Well, listen to this. Researchers invent a device that uses acoustics to mimic the mating call of an insect devastating Florida's orange groves. Hey, you know what? We don't need to spray all of this untested pesticide all over the oranges to then give to little Johnny at his lunch. We might be able to use sound to get rid of them. Fighting pests with sound waves, not pesticides. A tiny bug is threatening your morning orange juice. And in Florida, the Asian citrus psyllid, an aphid-sized creature that feeds on the stems and leaves of citrus trees, has cost the juice business $3.6 billion between the years of 2006 and 2012. the real damage from quote-unquote citrus greening comes from bacteria spread by the bugs, which causes the leaves to turn yellow and kills the trees within a few years. Researchers are looking into new ways to combat the pests, and one project focuses on sound rather than pesticides to disrupt the insects' mating habits. We are trying hard to cut down on the use of pesticides in orange groves, partly because we are worried that they'll build up resistance to pesticides and that will make things even worse, says Richard Mankin, a research entomologist with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Well, somebody with some sense. He presented findings on acoustic disruption at the meeting of the American Acoustical Society this week in Jacksonville. We should look into them because we also read about a few weeks ago some research that DARPA was doing with all kinds of brain research and manipulating the body using sound and acoustics as well. When a male sphilid wants to mate, he alerts a female by sitting on a leaf and buzzing his wings to send vibrations along the leaves and branches. So to disrupt this activity, the researchers created a device containing a piezoelectric buzzer and a microphone wired to a microcontroller. The device detects the incoming male call and emits a fake female response call through a buzzer before any neighboring sphilids can answer. And when the male bug comes near the device, he gets snagged and immobilized on an adhesive surface. Well, that's kind of horrible, but hey, it's all about the orange juice, people. In lab tests, the insects subjected to the noise were 4 times less likely to find a mate than other sphilids. Mankin said the gadget will soon be tested in orange groves, and he has worked on similar sound disruptors for grapevines. It is unknown if the vibrational sound would have other ecological impacts. The team is working to lower the price of the device, which now costs between $50 to $200 and only covers 2 feet of a tree. Mankin said that in the short term, sound will not trump pesticides. So it's not at all good news, but they're working on it in fighting the Asian citrus sphilid. But looking ahead, he says, we're expecting, however, that the sphilids will become resistant to the pesticides and that the cost of new technologies will continue to decrease. He hopes the device can work in tandem with pesticides, targeting infestations to reduce the amount of chemicals used and help postpone the sphilids' development of resistance to insecticides. Trying to develop electronic-based pest control is a good idea because it will help the production of food, and we need all the help we can get to feed the world's growing population in the future, which seems to be the mantra. Remember, climate change and lack of food is what's motivating it all. But there was even another story. This is what caught me. There's another story that came out. So that one was like October 4th. This one was from September of 2014 out of Italy. Reducing pesticides and adding sound vibrations and boosting harvests. So, hey, why do we need genetically modified anything? We can apparently use sound to boost harvests, to feed the blossoming population on this blue dot that apparently is overpopulated and we can't feed. Yes, sound. Scientists are experimenting with sound vibrations to replace pesticides and adapting different eco-friendly methods that are able to boost harvests and open up a new chapter in sustainable farming. Scientists in Italy knows food, trust me, are experimenting with sound vibrations to replace pesticides, adapting different eco-friendly methods that are able to boost harvests and open up sustainable farming. Scientists in northern Italy, with unusual and totally eco-friendly sound and odor devices to fight off insects from their cultivated fields. And their study suggests that these methods could be as efficient in protecting crops as using chemical-based pesticides. Whoever is doing this research, better look out, because Monsanto is going to come find them. Whoa, telling them they don't need pesticides. They don't need genetic modification because we can do it naturally with sound. In the meantime, a field study near Pisa, Italy, researchers are learning how important it is to keep semi-natural habits next to cultivated fields. These areas are an important source for pollinators, and now it seems they even have an impact on the yield of cultivated crops. The European grapeberry moth and the cicada are considered to be major pests of cultivated grapes. Commonly, farmers use plant protection products like insecticides or plant growing regulators to protect their crops against pests and disease. But used in the wrong way, pesticides, of course, can pose a risk to humans and the surrounding environment. At the Fonda in Zone Edmund Mach in Italy, Irrat Pirot and her team of the EU research project called PURE, P-U-R-E, I'm not sure what that acronym is for, have found ways to reduce the high pesticide rate in the European grapevine sector by disturbing the mating process of the pests. Again, so hey, this was in 2014. I wonder if this dude here in Florida is taking credit for the idea, because I'd say they probably came up with that first here in Italy. Anyway, yeah, they're looking to disturb the mating process of the pests using special vibrations, and the odor of pheromones will in the future help to prevent an offspring of the pests, and this could reduce the use of pesticides close to zero. In central Italy, near Pisa, scientists of the EU research project called QESSA, it's Q-U, capital E-S-S-A, wants to understand how the land next to the cultivated fields, known as semi-natural habitats, may help maximize the harvest. Camilla Moonen and her team focus on natural pollinators like the wild bee, and so they should. In experiments, they are investigating whether natural pollinators contribute to higher yield quality. Well, you think so? I don't think those robo bees are going to do such a good job if every time they're working on pollinating, they're being called away for a surveillance job. Right? That's what they said on the Harvard robo bees site, that they could be used to pollinate crops or to do surveillance. Well, those robo bees are going to be way too busy doing surveillance to do pollination. Anyway, to finish the story up, both of these studies have shown that modern agriculture can still learn from nature and secure a successful harvest and reduce the use of chemicals at the same time. So, kind of good news. Wouldn't that be wonderful if they would be able to use sound instead of pesticide? All right. So I'm not really sure where we want to end up this show. I think I want to look at this one. The Nose Knows. It's titled... Now, years ago, there was a movie, and Divine was in it, but I don't remember what it was called. But you guys will remember it. It's back from the 70s or the 80s. Divine. It was a good movie, but it was a cult classic. And when the movie came out in the theaters, they apparently released it with a scratch and sniff card. And when you saw the movie, it said, scratch the smelly sock section here. Well, ever since that movie, and then computers came out, and they've been talking about smell-o-vision for a very long time, to be able to add dimension to being sucked into the machine. And even when I was a tech 20 years ago, They had talked about that being a possibility. I've seen it a few times. USB chip with esters, which are synthetic smells. So that when you go somewhere, you can actually maybe smell the fragrance of the recipe you're looking at or whatever. Well, check this out. They're getting closer. They now have an artificial nose. Artificial nose, quote unquote, smells when food is about to go bad. Wouldn't this be a nice little add-on to your smart fridge? They can go in and sniff your cheese. Sniff your human vegan cheese. Cameras gave computers eyes. Microphones gave them ears. Touchscreens gave them tactile perception. And now the Massachusetts-based company C2Sense has invented a tiny chip that gives computers a sense of smell. Kind of scary when we've been talking about biosensors and being able to make them ubiquitous and them being used in spying. I don't know how much a nose knows in the computer is going to be a good thing. The first goal of the company, says co-founder and CTO Jan Schnorr, is to use machines to sniff out spoiling food. Hey, maybe the FDA and the USDA could use some help. I bet they're going to get like sniffing inspectors now. We know that that's how they are inspecting seafood coming out of the Gulf right now. The nose knows. But they're using physical people at this point. But anyway, they're going to use the machines to sniff out spoiling food, and that could have a much bigger impact than you think. Food spoilage can be contagious. You know the saying, one bad apple can spoil the whole batch. Well, it's true. As food ripens, it releases a musky gas called ethylene. And when fruits are exposed to ethylene, they ripen more quickly and give off more ethylene themselves, creating a domino effect that speeds up the ripening process for every piece of fruit nearby. And if you've ever had apples in a big container together, oh my God, it went so fast. All right, guys, it's Friday. Make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is up next. Awesome programming tonight and all weekend. And I will catch up with you on Monday.